May 15th meeting of the Commission on Aging will come to order. First, we'll have roll call.
Here.
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 Thank you. May I have a motion to approve our agenda? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? A motion to approve the minutes dated April 17th, 2018.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed or abstain?
Abstain.
Thank you. Is there a Public Health Advisory Committee update, Amy?
I'm working with the public.
Just punch the button.
Working with the Public Health Advisory Committee to find areas of common interest, especially around food insecurity, and to let them know what we're doing, and they'll let us know what they're doing. They have a lot of focus on working with children, and yet they have an interest in working with all people who need public health services in Clark County. So we're developing that connection.
Thank you. And a report from the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington.
Well, obviously, I'm not Pat Janik, but I did stand in for Pat at the meeting this month. And they remind us that May is Older Americans Month. And they had a nursing services RN for Medicaid case management who gave a presentation on what she did and what the other nurses did to assist Medicaid patients and Medicare patients to get good health care. It was very interesting. I also gave them an overview and a brief history of COA, the aging plan, and what some of our recommendations and publications are. And then the most important thing they discussed was their Senior Lobby Day debrief. They go every year up to Olympia. They have a special day set aside for seniors, and so they are very enthusiastic about doing that. Thank you.
Thanks. Tonight is our third in our focus on transportation, our third meeting on transportation. Just by way of recapping, we began our series in February, and our first speaker was Dr. Alan Della Torre from Portland State University. And he's a gerontologist and research assistant over there. And he's also a longtime friend of the commission that goes way back to the Aging Readiness Plan. A couple of his highlights, he pointed out that 79% of older adults live in a car-dependent suburban or rural community, creating a giant mismatch between demand for transportation options and the ability to meet those demands. He also emphasized walkable communities and universal design, and that happened to intersect with our interest in complete streets, which I'll say more about in a minute. In April, we had Sean Donaghy, who is the executive director of CTRAN, and he has also offered to be a year-long partner in this process, so we're pleased about that. He provided an overview of CTRAN's services and pointed out that they do 6 million rides a year. But we still have a lot of people in a lot of cars. Also, one of the services that stood out to me from CTRAN was the trainers or ambassadors, people who are willing to work with riders or wannabe riders that don't quite know how to read the fares, the schedules, or make system transfers, and they can work with people one-on-one. He also pointed out that he sees CTRAN as a steward in our community, and he also spoke to the need for complete streets. During our meeting last time, we voted to send a letter of support to the Clark County councilors who are now considering an ordinance for complete streets. Complete streets, for those who don't know, are streets that work for everyone. Whether you drive a car, haul freight, someday sit in an automated vehicle or ride a bike, and also sidewalks and crosswalks that go along with that. For people who walk, use a wheelchair or a walker, or push a stroller or have difficulty hearing or seeing. So that's the kind of thing we want to see in our community. We'd also like to retrofit it where it doesn't exist. So the complete streets concept is something that was discussed in our aging readiness plan in 2012. So when we sent that letter, we had a lot of ammunition to speak in behalf of that, and we'll be monitoring that throughout the year. Tonight, we have two speakers. It's a doubleheader, as they say in baseball. Colleen Kuhn is Executive Director of the Human Service Council, and she will tell us what the Human Services Council does and also how it helps provide transportation services to people in Southwest Washington. And the Human Services Council has been a partner with us throughout our existence, and especially when we recommended or endorsed your request for a mobility services coordinator. So welcome back, Colleen.
So thank you for inviting me to present on other community transportation options that serve Clark County. The Human Services Council is a private nonprofit. We have been serving Southwest Washington for a number of years, and were incorporated in 1957. Currently, we primarily operate transportation programs and volunteer programs. So maybe we can start by talking about, you heard from Sean last month about C-TRAN and fixed route transit services, as well as paratransit ADA services. But it's important that you know that there are a whole lot of other community transportation providers who assist in transporting older adults, people with disabilities, and other populations within the community. The local governments, nonprofits, volunteer organizations, and private for hire companies all are included in that transportation network. And oftentimes, provision of those services fall outside of C-TRAN's region or fixed route or ADA paratransit services, or maybe go above and beyond what their ADA paratransit services could provide. Trips provided by other community providers may be paid for through private pay by the individual, through individual's insurance, or through contracted services, such as is the case with our agency. Human Services Council's mission is to provide people with access to services and transportation. I'm sorry, am I supposed to be? I am. Okay. Access to services, transportation, and volunteer opportunities that impact their lives and strengthen the Southwest Washington community. We serve the Southwest Washington region, including Clark, Cowlitz, Wakayakum, Klickitat, and Skamania counties, primarily with our Medicaid transportation program. We also operate, like I said, a number of volunteer programs and transportation services. We are governed by a volunteer board of directors, of which Linda O'Leary is our board chair. So it's good to know that she's here representing all of you and representing us and the aging population in Clark County. So the Human Services Council, as I mentioned, operates the non-emergency medical transportation program. And that is covered under the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare. Access to services, medical services under Medicaid is required. So in Washington State, the Washington State Healthcare Authority contracts with six different transportation brokerages to operate the non-emergency medical transportation program. Through that, we operate a call center at our location, serving the five counties that I mentioned, and staff receive calls from individuals who are covered by Medicaid and need transport to get to their medical appointments. We can provide transport through door-to-door or hand-through-door, door-through-door services with our contracted providers, including volunteers, including for-profit companies, including government organizations. We may provide our clients with day, bus passes or monthly passes if they have enough trips, medical trips to qualify. That's often the case if we have individuals who are well enough to use fixed route and need to go to appointments several times a week or more than five times a month. We can also provide gas vouchers for individuals if they have their own vehicle or the person that's driving them has their own vehicle. We get proof of insurance, driver's license, and registration. And then we have agreements with a number of different fuel companies in the five-county area so that clients can go get their fuel and get to where they need to go. We can also do self-reimbursements for clients who do have a vehicle but just really can't afford the extra expense of fuel to get to their medical appointments. And we're finding, actually, with the expansion of the Medicaid coverage, a lot of the younger population are the individuals who have vehicles or know people who have vehicles. So a lot of self-reimbursement for those individuals. But again, for a lot of the older individuals or people with disabilities, we're providing a good number of door-to-door trips. We also receive funding through a consolidated grant through the Washington State Department of Transportation. We apply for those every 2 years, and that two-year cycle's coming up. It seems like it comes up continually. And so for Clark County, we operate a program we call Reserve a Ride. And Reserve a Ride is a program that primarily supports individuals who are not eligible for Medicaid transportation services to get to life-sustaining medical appointments like dialysis and cancer treatments. We also have a contract with CTRAN through their 5310 funds to help support those trips as well. We're, for the first time in a long time, do not have a waiting list for that service. So in addition to those life-sustaining trips, we can also provide general medical trips, shopping and nutrition trips, and trips to other basic services. So we're excited about the ability to do more with those dollars. We also operate the Reserve a Ride program in Cowlitz and Wakayakum counties, and there we actually do have a waiting list of about 15 individuals who need that service. So we are constantly looking for ways to streamline our operations and excuse me, the methods of transport so that we can provide more trips for the community. In Clark County, we also, through Washington State Department of Transportation, receive funding to operate an employment transportation program and a bike to work program. And that program helps individuals get to work or work-related activities such as job interviews, job training, those kinds of things. As was mentioned earlier, we have our mobility management program that we partnered with CTRAN on, and we received a letter from the Commission on Aging in support of that program, and Bill Bauman is our mobility coordinator. And Bill's role really is to, for Clark County, to kind of identify what the needs are and help people make connections to the services that they need, whether it be services provided by the Human Services Council or other organizations. He also works, he also facilitates our local coordinating coalition, as well as is working on emergency management preparation for the community, working with CTRAN and the local 911 organization to help identify who will be doing what and what resources will be needed if there were an emergency in the community. Bill has had an opportunity to have some really wonderful successes since he's been with us. And while they aren't huge and serve large populations, they're really important to the people that he's helped. One example of that is a woman who contacted the city of Vancouver and needed a new battery for her wheelchair, and she couldn't afford it. So they contacted us, and I directed them to Bill, and Bill was able to garner community support to get a battery for that woman's wheelchair and have that installed. So that was a really nice opportunity to see what mobility management can do for the community. He also very recently was able to work with the City of Vancouver to help on some crosswalk signals and alarms for a woman who is blind and hard of hearing and can take fixed route services on CTRAN, but in order to get to the fixed route had to kind of walk the opposite way to catch the bus that was most safe route for her. And the city of Vancouver was great and responded really timely. CTRAN has done the same. Bill is also a member of the Citizens Advisory Committee for CTRAN, so he's become a strong advocate for seniors, people with disabilities, and other at-risk populations in the community. So, oh, and he's sitting right there. Raise your hand, Bill. We also, a few years ago, received a Veterans Transportation and Community Living Initiative grant that allowed us to do a couple of technology projects, and one was to develop a one-call, one-click trip resource center. So when Bill came on board, he was tasked with finalizing that project and launching it to the community. And what that is it's a, just as the name says, a one-call, one-click trip center where individuals can either go online in the five-county area and put in information about where they're at and where they want to go and be able to see what their transportation options are to make those trips. There's opportunities for individuals 65 and older to indicate that, to help narrow the transportation options if that's necessary. Same thing for low income or veterans. So really nice online presence that helps people map out their trips and know what those resources are that are available for them in their community. And if individuals don't have a computer or are not comfortable with that, they call a phone line and Bill helps them map out that trip. And that's often the way he finds out about what those unmet needs are in our community. We also have a small program called Sponsor a Ride, and that's a program where we receive community donations or individuals can set up their own individual accounts to make sure seniors and people with disabilities have access to services that they need through transportation. We have had a number of families, for example, who are back east or in the Midwest and have parents aging in place here and want to make sure that they can access the services they need. So they'll actually sponsor an account for that individual, and we then can set up the trip for them. And you know, some of the questions we get are, so why would I do that instead of taking a taxi? I think that the real distinct difference is we do a good deal of vetting and training. We ensure there's a good deal of vetting and training, and it's required by our contracts for our contracted transportation companies. So individuals can feel very comfortable and confident that the services that they are receiving are safe and reliable, and we actually have one of our vendors, contracted vendors out in the audience too, Elizabeth from Mercy Transportation. Those are all the transportation services that the Human Services Council provides. We also contract and work with Catholic Community Services, who operates a volunteer chore program and provides volunteer trips for the community. We do work with the Area Agency on Aging to coordinate trips for their case managers and their clients. We are just beginning to work with Villages Clark County. They approached us and were interested in identifying whether the Human Services Council could help with the vetting and training process for volunteer drivers for the communities they're going to be serving. We also work with the Disabled American Veterans, the American Cancer Society, and a number of other community partners to do our best to ensure that all individuals in Clark County and Southwest Washington have access to safe, affordable, and reliable transportation services. So just a little bit more about the One Call, One Click Trip Resource Center that was operated, actually developed by the Human Services Council. That was also a project that has been in the Human Services Transportation Plan as a need for the community. We are looking potentially to expand that project into Pacific Lewis and Grays Harbors County, as we have developed a coalition up in that region as well, a transportation coalition. It's really a user-friendly way for people to identify what those transportation options are to meet their needs. And as I indicated, they can kind of sort out by category what specific transportation options may be unique to them. One thing that I think it's important for all of you to know, and certainly everybody in the room, is that we are currently working with the Regional Transportation Council on the update to the Coordinated Human Services Transportation Plan. That's a plan required by the Federal Transit Administration to be updated every 4 years. Washington State assigns that role out to the regional and metropolitan transportation organizations. And that's currently in process. So I have put on the website the link to the Regional Transportation Council's website so that you can go on and fill out their survey and provide them with additional information about what you know to be the needs or what you may experience as the needs for Clark County, Klickitat, and Skamania counties. We also, as I mentioned, Bill facilitates the work of the Accessible Transportation Coalition. That's a group that was formed in 2012. Actually, Walt Gordon and I from CTRAN and I and Bob Sellers submitted an application to Easter Seals Project Action to receive technical assistance from Easter Seals to develop a community plan for accessible transportation. Through that plan, we held a two-day planning event, which included, community service providers, transportation providers, taxi companies, government officials, government staff, nonprofits, and transit. And in that 2 days, we really worked on what is our vision and for the Southwest Washington, and in particular the Clark County region. And that vision really did become making sure that we have accessible, reliable, affordable transportation for options for all. And that was a technical assistance grant we received, and we received additional support from the folks at Easter Seals back in Washington, D.C. We were one of 10 projects selected around the country for that, and that Transportation Coalition continues to meet on a quarterly basis today to talk about what those transportation needs are and strategize how we work to resolve those issues. And Chuck Frayer is one of our coalition members as well. CTRAN, as I've already mentioned several times, has been an important community partner with the Human Services Council and in the community. And when we talk about community transportation, that really includes everybody. I mean, it truly takes a village to ensure that our populations get where they need to go. So whether that's fixed route transit, whether it's community transportation, private nonprofit, or Uber or Lyft, it's important to make sure the resources are available for the people who need them. We also work closely with health providers, community service providers, and private businesses. And I'm really excited to share that the Human Services Council was selected as Decana Subaru's local hometown charity. So they just presented us with a check last week for donations that were received through the Subaru Share the Love event. So what's next? We do want to work on completing that Coordinated Human Services Transportation Plan. The local coordinating coalition is very involved in that process. So we're supporting outreach, we're supporting surveying, we're supporting presentations to the community. And then once that plan is updated, and it will include what are the identified needs in the community, what are the unmet needs in the community, as well as demographics about the community, and what are the proposed solutions to those needs. And as part of WASHDOT, Washington State Department's Consolidated Grant Program, if you're to apply for a grant, your project has to be outlined within the Human Services Transportation Plan for it to be considered to be funded. So part of the role of the Local Coordinating Coalition is to evaluate and rank local projects in the region. We are really excited and looking towards the development, potential development of a volunteer and driver training program. Catholic Community Services certainly does a great job of providing volunteer drivers, but we believe there is more need out there than even they can tackle. So because of the fact that we also operate a number of volunteer programs, it seems like a really normal and natural fit to develop our own internal volunteer driver program. We're also looking at a driver training aspect of that for a number of reasons. One is, as I mentioned, we have been working with the local neighborhood associations. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on their name right now, who were interested in knowing if we could provide training for their volunteers. So being able to support those kinds of trainings for volunteers would be great, but we also understand there's a need, and we hear this from our contracted providers and actually around the entire state, that companies are having a difficult time hiring paid drivers. So our goal really is to develop a comprehensive driver training program that includes training, not only classroom training or online training, but hands-on training. And we're hoping with that we might be able to partner with CTRAN or another private company locally to provide us with a vehicle that we could assign as a community van pool. And that vehicle could be used by our volunteer drivers to help provide trips. It could also be used for that hands-on training for our volunteer or driver training program. And we are looking to that donation from Dakana Subaru to help fund that project. I mentioned earlier we're looking to expand the One Call, One Click Trip Resource Center into a little further north, Pacific Lewis and Grays Harbor. We worked with the Regional Transportation Planning Organization that represents Cowlitz, Wakayak, and Pacific Lewis and Grays Harbor on an Easter Seals Project Action Grant, and were awarded that last year. So we are working with that group on developing a similar coordination body that we have here in Clark County. We have looked into a lot, and certainly Bill's very interested in knowing how we can work with transportation network companies like Uber and Lyft. I can tell you that this past legislative session, there were a number of bills around regulations of companies like Uber and Lyft. And the only thing that really was resolved is that the Senate Transportation Committee will be forming a task force to look into what types of regulations are appropriate for transportation network companies. They're also looking at kind of how do we ensure all providers, especially those who serve vulnerable populations, have the appropriate vetting and training needed so that we can all feel comfortable that our populations are being served safely. It was interesting, I was just talking to Kevin, who's the next presenter, about a presentation I did and a conference I was at last week, and there was a lot of discussion around how to engage transportation network companies, in particular in rural communities for seniors. There were technology folks there. There were Volkswagen, Toyota kind of folks there. And there was a lot of good discussion about how we can help fold that in as part of the overall transportation network. But what I felt was really lacking was the importance of engaging those communities and engaging those populations. So when I think about going into a rural community and introducing a driverless vehicle or asking a senior or person with disabilities to take Uber or Lyft, I expect I'm going to get some pushback on that. So So I was really trying to encourage them to get connected to the rural communities and get connected to the populations that really need the service, and get them understanding and educated, and look for those champions who can help people be comfortable with those kinds of options. Uber and Lyft, it's difficult because currently we couldn't use them because our contracts require a higher level of background checking and vehicle records checking and training, and our insurance company, quite frankly, won't cover us. So that doesn't mean we shouldn't keep trying and shouldn't keep looking, because as our population ages, I think we're going to need all the resources we can possibly get. So those are the things that kind of are next on our radar. And at this point, I feel like I've spewed out a lot of information to you. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Is there a deadline for the update to the Coordinated Human Services Transportation Plan, or is it ongoing?
No, the update to the plan is in process right now, and my understanding is that they expect to have it completed by September.
Okay.
So a lot of outreach being done to the representatives of the disabilities community. We've had several public forums on that, and just general outreach from members of the local transportation coalition.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much for what you presented. I heard a lot about transportation to medical appointments and life-sustaining medical appointments. Is there transportation to meet socialization needs?
Very, very limited through our agency. Certainly Catholic Community Services may be a good resource for socialization and other activities. As I was mentioning, our Reserve a Ride program at this moment in time is able to provide some additional trips for general medical, shopping trips, socialization kind of trips. But that is not always the case, and that's really due to limited funding. It's interesting that you bring that up. I'm working with Washington State Department of Transportation. They do a statewide coordinated human services transportation plan update every 4 years, so I'm on a stakeholder committee with them. And the question, our homework assignment before our next meeting is to come back and talk about what is that thing that really, really is important to you, that really keeps you up at night in regards to unmet needs. And that's it. For me, that's really it. I mean, while we don't meet all needs, we do a pretty fair job of getting people to medical appointments, but there's more to life than that. So that's definitely something that I hope that volunteer driver and driver training program can help fit some of those needs, serve some of those needs, and certainly do more group trips to help with socialization even in that transport process. So, but honestly, I feel like there's not a lot of options.
Thank you. Pat, do you have a question?
Thank you for your presentation.
Yeah.
You mentioned rural. Are you holding some of your public forums on this plan in rural areas to get their input?
Yes, there are actually two of the transportation planners who work for the Regional Transportation Council, and one of them focuses on Clark County, the other focuses on Skamania and Klickitat County, and then, I mean, it really happens all around the state. And Washington State Department of Transportation is very prescriptive about the kind of outreach that needs to be done in developing these plans. So similar kinds of outreach efforts are being done in those rural counties as well.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Questions from the audience? Chuck.
Excellent, as always.
Thank you
for all your information. And again, we're talking about rural, and that is one of the huge issues we have here in this county, of course. We always complain and gripe about C-TRAN and not being able to go and do their thing and stuff. And we've just started talking about with Lyft and Uber, maybe the possibility of some kind of a discount for seniors to encourage them out there and even in within the city to use that that kind of transportation a little bit more and everything. Has there been any discussion in what you've been involved with within the state with that?
Not a lot, although I do have to say it seems to me like Uber and Lyft are very creative in how they're approaching transportation. In some cases, they're actually taking nurses and medical providers out to the communities and delivering groceries and other services to folks in the rural population or the rural areas. There has not been a lot of discussion about discounts for the aging population, and quite honestly, part of that is a concern about the level of vetting that happens. It's that conference I was telling you about that I was at last week. It was in Berkeley, California, and I took Lyft to get from my hotel back to the airport and wanted to take the driver home with me in a suitcase and have her work for our organization because she was so wonderful. But she told me some pretty big horror stories about Uber and Lyft, and it caused me concern, which is why I think our even our insurance company will not support us using those kinds of services under contract. There, I understand there is a Medicaid transportation broker, and I'm not sure what part of the country it's in, that is engaging Uber and Lyft for their Medicaid services, and they're doing so by the clients themselves booking and paying for the trip and then them reimbursing the clients. So that certainly could be something to be explored. But I really I think it's important to understand what the community wants and how comfortable people feel with that.
Well, you bring up an excellent point about, you know, taking advantage of seniors and all of that. You know, I mean, that is a huge issue in a lot of things that we're dealing with and everything. So that's an excellent point, though.
So thank you very much, Colleen. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We know you have another obligation, so we appreciate your making time to be here, Colleen. Our second speaker is Kevin Chambers. He is the principal with Full Path Transit Technology. Kevin will discuss emerging technologies that will help us address transportation needs. Is that right, Kevin?
Right.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you, everybody. It's an honor to be here and present to you all on this topic. I'm going to jump right into it here, and let me see if I can see if this works. Great. There's a lot going on in the world of transportation and technology. We are really potentially at the cusp of a real sea change in how transportation happens for people. And it's potentially very disruptive, very transformational, and I'm really appreciate your forethought in wanting to explore this topic together. So I'm going to start off with some very overarching technology trends that I think are, some of them are very obvious, and some of them are more under the hood of the industry. I'm going to start off with just what some of the user-facing trends are Each of these pieces, as I go through them, are going to kind of culminate in kind of how this is going to affect transportation. So first, I want to just take a look at user-facing trends. And some of these are just incredibly obvious. The greatest user-facing trends is either in your pocket or on the desk in front of you. It's the mobile device, right, that are multi-purpose, networked, location, and environment aware. And really, they are our gateway to the internet, right? And is there anybody here who doesn't have a, well, let me see. Who here has a smartphone? Let's ask it that way. Yeah. So I think, you know,
who
this
doesn't?
Is probably, yeah. All right. Congratulations. Congratulations. I decided to reverse the question at the last minute. I'm like, I don't want to out anybody because they don't have a smartphone if they don't want to talk about it. But I'm going to ask people to raise their hands a little bit over the course of the presentation because I'm curious about knowledge and experience and interaction with some of these terms that I'm using. So, so mobile devices, so many people have them now, and we're using them to communicate, so much so that the cost of communication is approaching zero. Now, you're probably thinking, well, the cost of my communication is not zero. Just look at my cell phone bill. But think about it a different way of how much is being transmitted through your device to the world right now, and just in terms of sheer quantity of information. Whether you're occasionally looking at YouTube or you're emailing or you're checking, texting, the sheer quantity of information that's being transferred back and forth constantly and the fact that your phone is checking all the time for all these other services and status and getting information is orders of magnitude larger than it's ever been, and it's growing, right? So the question is no longer, can we communicate with people? The question is now, should we be communicating? Those are the issues now. It's like over-communication, saturation of communication, overwhelm. That's the problem. No longer can we, it should we. And that's a real big change. Okay, so that's one element, just on the user-facing side. Next is the transportation industry trends. And this is where we get into the whiz-bang, wow, this is what it's going to be like someday. The big talk in the industry is about vehicles that will be connected, shared, electrified, and automated, right? So a lot of these, we're already there. A lot of our vehicles are already connected because we're in them and we're carrying these, right? So we're kind of part of their way there already. The shared is growing, Uber Pool, you know, these are all sharing technologies or sharing platforms. Electrified is already here, and that is growing very quickly. There's electric vehicles on the road now, and the largest companies are like Volkswagen, which I believe is right up there with Toyota with being the largest auto manufacturer. They're switching to all electric over the next few years, as are some of the other major manufacturers. And so this gives rise to new acronyms. And so the idea of fleets of autonomous vehicles that are electric and shared. Fleets is a really key term to be thinking about because we're often thinking about these things in terms of Tesla and getting your own automated vehicle maybe. I don't think that's where things are going to be happening. I don't think that's the most interesting area. I think the most interesting area is fleets. And there you'll see a demonstration vehicle. That is a photo from a service that's being demoed in Australia, but this is also being demoed across the United States, Las Vegas, Florida. There's a number of these services. So that is a fully autonomous electric minibus. And imagine those scaling up and traveling around your neighborhood. Right? That is happening now and around the corner in terms of penetration into our lives. The tech sector. So some of these things are really obvious. One is that there are really big players in the tech sector. And I don't even know how to use the can I just say really big. The top five tech companies in the world by measure of market capitalization are all technology companies. Actually, I think Facebook just dropped out of the top five. They've been having challenges recently. But as of December of last year, all of those were tech companies. I don't need to tell you their names because you know them and you can't get away from them. So that's one thing, and we'll be coming back to that in terms of how it impacts these later things I'll be talking about. Another big one is the Internet of Things. How many people are familiar with the term Internet of Things? Have you heard that term? A few of you? Okay. Internet of Things is just think of gadgets that are already around and attaching network Internet connectivity to them. So they're no longer just doing whatever they do, but they're relaying things to servers out in there in the Internet. Everything, there's the classic one of your toaster, your refrigerator, but also in the world of technology, software, or excuse me, transportation, think of fleets that all the vehicles are connected to the Internet. Think about just tremendous information being gathered out in the world and being pulled together and then being used for optimizing services and optimizing how the world works. And that's how we get to the next bullet point, which is big data. The scale at which we are aggregating and accumulating data and then sifting through it to make tweaks and improvement to things is really boggles the imagination for me. I won't try to bring out any of the statistics, but it's the pace of increase of how much we're acquiring data and then storing it and sifting through it is increasing orders of magnitude every year. And what we're doing with that is applying artificial intelligence to that so that we have systems that are now making decisions based on tremendous amounts of information that a human really can't get through and make sense of and act on quickly, but an artificial system that's been trained can. Where are those decisions being made? In the cloud. Now, the cloud is a great marketing term for doing computing on somebody else's computer, which is basically what that means. Now that we have these tech giants with these enormous resources, it's very easy for services to be done on somebody else's computer in data centers at tremendous scale. And that yields the last point, which is the idea of everything as a service. Has anyone heard the term software as a service? How many people are familiar with that term? You're using it now. If you use Google Docs, if you use Microsoft 365, you're using software as a service. That was the first software as a service, the first as a service thing. And now there's just more and more things as a service. If you own a small business, you know about payroll as a service. If you need to run a call center and you need to get up, scale up quickly, you know about call centers as a service, where the only thing you have anything in your back office, you're just plugging a phone into the internet, and you could plug 100 phones in the internet, and suddenly you have a call center. And so that takes us to, that is sort of penetrating the entire economy now, is all these things that used to have your own stuff. Now you don't have to have your own stuff. You just pay somebody. You start paying a monthly sum, and you have it immediately, and it provides tremendous scaling, which has given rise to the next term, which is mobility as a service. How many people have heard that term, mobility as a service? A few of you. Watch for this term. This term will be coming out more and more. There's some not everybody's settled on that name, although I think it's probably the one that we'll be using more. Mobility on demand is the term that the Federal Transit Administration uses for some of its grant programs. I've also heard transportation as a service. Going forward, I'll be using MaaS, or mobility as a service. Let's dig into this idea, because it is sort of in the transportation technology sector, the culmination of everything we were just talking about. The goal of MaaS is to provide a comprehensive package of transportation services that can replace personal vehicle ownership. If you feel like you need to have a car, now in 5 to 10 years, you may not feel that way anymore. You won't have to bother with all that stuff. Instead, you can sign up for an account and get everything you need to move around through a service. Now, for those of you who are thinking about aging and how that works at a policy level, your ears are probably perking up because mobility and the point at which a person can no longer viably have their own car dramatically impacts all sorts of outcomes, right? A key factor of age-friendly communities is, and the ability to age in place is how easily you can get out and get around without a car. So let's dive into this idea of mobility as a service and think about, as this will wrap up with a conversation about how this can apply to aging. So there's 5 key elements to mobility as a service. One is easy discovery. You can find out what your options are, right? Second one, easy decision making. You can figure out of those options which one you want to take, right? Which one is the best one for you? Key on that is price, and we'll talk about that more later. Next, you can not just know about it, select it, but then you can book, right? If it's not a fixed route service, right? Next is you can easily switch between modes. So mobility as a service, if you just think, oh, is this just repackaging of Uber and Lyft? No, it's not. Ideally, transit, in my opinion, should be at the center of mobility as a service, but transit doesn't go everywhere, and so there's first mile, last mile issues, right? And if you've ever had to transfer using fixed route transit, you know it can sometimes be sketchy. You know, sometimes it can be that last mile or that first mile can be hard. But imagine if there were an Uber or there were a Lyft or there were a bike share or there were some other service that could bridge those, get you to that, the from your origin or to your destination easily. And the last one is payment. That if you're switching modes, let's say you have a complex trip that involves 4 modes, that all those can be handled through one fare instrument, right? So imagine the idea of a mobility account that handles all of that. Okay, so those are the key elements. Now, we're going to dig into each of those in a moment, but first I want to talk about who some of the key mobility as a service players are. And this will give you a sense for how quickly things are moving. So in the app world, there's companies like Moovo, which has their offices across the river in Portland. They work on fare payment and also on the discovery side a bit. They're owned by Daimler. And there's also Uber, obviously. Uber doesn't just have apps for their own service. They're, as of the news came out, what, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, that they are moving into sort of a mobility as a service thing where other options are going to show up on their app also. So TNCs are obviously going to be pivotal to mobility as a service to cover that. They're going to be the grout that could cover and fill in a lot of these gaps between larger modes. So Lyft and Uber figure in prominently. In the world of transit, Chariot is a private sort of kind of flexible transit service that's in a few cities. It's owned or is soon to be owned by Ford. Bridge was operating in D.C. and Kansas City. They recently went defunct and have been bought out and now and they're now trying to do things in Australia, the new company that bought them out. They were VC funded. VC stands for venture capital. So you just think of all this technology money floating around and just going into things that seem promising. That's venture capital or VC money. So also in transit, obviously public transit companies of agencies, but not much. And that's because this is a lot of venture capital funded stuff. And transit companies don't have those kind of resources, but they are participating to the extent that they can. And every transit agency is looking at all this stuff with a close eye. Car share, Car2Go, operates in Portland. It's owned by Daimler. Reach Now also operates in Portland and a number of other cities. Owned by Mercedes. Maven doesn't operate in this part of the country, but is owned by GM. There's Bike Share, and I put Bike-ish Share because it's no longer just bikes, but now there's scooters, the kind you stand on. Just recently, they deployed out in San Francisco, and that's been very interesting to watch. If you follow those news, and these are electric scooters, I should say, electric stand-up scooters. They're deploying out in Washington, D.C., as well as sit-down scooters like Scoot Networks there in San Francisco. Lime Bike, Ofo, Mobike, all those are VC-funded. Jump is the company that makes the dockless bike share that is the platform that Portland's bike share system works on. Used to be called Social Bikes, now they're called Jump. And last month, they were purchased by Uber. Now, think about the fair payment world. There's some obvious players, Visa, large companies. Cubic, which is a large, I think their market cap is around $2 billion. They're the ones that do fair payment for really large entities like the MTA in New York City and CTA Chicago. TriMet is actually playing a role, and so is Vancouver in the form of Hop. Hop is actually a very interesting platform that is kind of a best of breed, and we're very lucky to have it here in this region. And Uber, of course, again. Lastly, I'll mention Amazon as a mobility as a service player because, if you flip mobility as a service on its head, you know, a lot of trips have to do with going out and getting something. Well, what if that thing just comes to you? Right? So Amazon and its ilk are changing the face of transportation also because, you know, if one of the main reasons you have for having a car is so you can get the 50-pound bag of dog food that you can't get any other way, well, if now there's another way to get it, it could be delivered to you at an affordable cost, well, then maybe you don't need your car anymore. But I want to look at all those names and parentheses after these. So, you know, we've got Daimler, Ford, Daimler, Mercedes, Uber shows up over and over again. You can see there's a lot of motion here. The big money in mobility is moving into this area, and a lot of these companies, they don't really know quite what to do, but they know things are changing, and the face of mobility is going to be really different, and everybody wants a stake. Everybody wants to get in early. And so that's why you have companies like the large auto manufacturers getting into car share, which maybe on the face of it isn't intuitive, but if you think about it, it's like, well, they want to be in early. Now let's go back to those factors for mobility as a service. So this is the part of the conversation we start to talk about how all this stuff works and where policy is going to matter. What do you need for easy discovery? Obviously, you need apps, right? That's the tip of the iceberg that everybody can see that none of this is really going to work without having an app where you have instant access to your options and easy ease of payment, all that stuff. But behind the scenes, there's data sharing. How are all these services, CTRAN, TriMet, all these services, how are they going to actually be able to communicate what their services look like? That happens through data sharing, and that data sharing happens through standards. Behind the scenes, there's about a 10-year-old standard called the General Transit Feed Spec, which is now being expanded to address real-time issues, and now it's being expanded even more to address flex. So demand response services can now be described using this standard. The challenge is these kind of standards, they benefit everybody in general, but nobody in particular. It's hard to develop standards in a really rapidly changing environment. So some of these things get a little bit of funding from the feds. Mostly it happens through kind of a stone soup process. When you think about what needs to happen around making mobility as a service thing, You want to think about, well, who's funding these underlying issues? One of them is standards. Easy decision making. So when you're looking at your options and you're deciding, well, am I going to take the bus or am I going to take the Uber or am I going to take the bike share? Am I going to walk? What am I going to do? Key factor is cost. And ideally, you want to have the cost of the service be reflective of what you want to have market-based pricing. Excuse me, I lost my train of thought there. But you want to have market-based pricing where the cost you see is reflective of what it really costs to provide that service. So that was really easy to say. But the fact is, very few elements of our transportation industry work that way. Personal car ownership is tremendously subsidized. There's a lot of costs that aren't visible, and there's a lot of costs that no one's paying for that are sort of externalized. Obviously, there's the pollution aspect. The costs of congestion are not really being tagged back to the person who's getting that, who's driving their car on that day. On the TNC side, you think of the Ubers and the Lyfts, they are propped up right now by staggering amounts of venture capital. So right now, Uber and Lyft are, I mean, Uber is losing on the order of $500 million a month, which is amazing to think about. And a lot of the prices are reflective of that subsidy. And then there's other things that are not really being fully accounted for. So obviously a lot of our transportation infrastructure is not in great shape, and that's because the people who are using that infrastructure are not fully paying for it. And the mechanism of how to do that is a whole other conversation, but that's a challenge to having market-based pricing. Next up is easy booking. So easy booking means you need to have application programming interfaces, or APIs, so that these systems can talk to each other, so that I could have one app that has all my options, and I say, oh, yep, I am going to take the Uber today. And in that, I can say, go with Uber, and that non-Uber app can talk to Uber and say, yep, book that. Now, the technology of the APIs is pretty simple, but the terms of use are critical. Terms of use is how Uber says, here's how you can use our APIs and here's how you cannot use them. Uber generally doesn't allow the use of their API if competing services are going to be showing up alongside. So that's what I would call an anti-competitive terms of use requirement. So that is a real strong policy thing that if you, and that's something that can be addressed in a regulatory framework. But you have to know that issue exists. So that's to put you on that on radar for y'all. Next is easy mode transfers. So some of the requirements, you know, I've already put in here. Everyone at the top says, yeah, we need apps. So again, that's the tip of the iceberg. We need apps for easy mode transfers so that if I'm switching, if my bus is coming late, it would be great if the TNC driver knew I was coming late and wasn't wasting his or her time waiting for me to come, right? And maybe could pick up another ride, and then somebody, some other driver will be available for the 10 minutes later. That's a big data issue. So aggregating historical information, getting real-time information, there's going to be a lot of research and institutional barriers needed. Data sharing is going to be important. So again, when we're talking about these large services and working with private companies, the TNCs have often been very reticent to share their data because, frankly, that's part of where they make the money, not off just the ride, but the data about the ride. So that can be addressed at the policy and regulatory level, that when these services are regulated, data sharing can be part of that regulation. Easy payment. So this is where you want to get all these folks together and then get them all to agree on common ways that we can make it easy for the customer to be served. And micropayments is one of the issues. You know, Visa is, the credit card systems is actually quite an expensive way to move money around. So if we're talking about lots of little fares, prices being moved around, that needs to be addressed. And there's a general challenge with bringing all these different players together. Now, mobility as a service has some other requirements, and I think these are kind of overarching issues that that are important to think about. One is that it works best if you have a hub. If there's one app, and there could be multiple ones, but I think the mobility as a service works best under maybe some sort of a utility model where there's one hub that's authoritative. And in the private sector, everybody loves to be the hub. Everybody loves to be the place where people go to get X, right? Amazon currently gets that when it comes to online purchasing. Google gets that when it comes to search. Facebook gets that when it comes to social networking. And you can see how that causes problems. So we want to be thinking about that really well. And it's also a hard job playing this hub role. And it's an open question how to get both the agility and the tech savviness together with a public interest orientation. One possible model is the idea of a transportation trust. This is presented to me by a colleague at MOVL the other day. And something modeled on the idea of like energy trusts. They take a little bit of your electricity bill and they redirect that money into helping everybody conserve energy because power companies have no inherent interest in energy conservation, right? Because they're selling, that's how they make more money is by producing more power plants. So there's a lot of possibilities there. And this is just a flag that this is a part of the mobility as a service puzzle that needs to be figured out. Another challenge to mobility as a service is it works best with density. The more density you have, the easier it is because you get this mesh of overlapping services and the number of options increase and the amount of robustness and fallbacks increase. So just money-wise, it pencils out easier in urban areas. I think to make it work in suburban, exurban, and rural areas really means you really need to get policy and planners on board and thinking about it. Automated fleets might fix some of that. I think another piece that's important, and this is where I wish Colleen were still here, I think it's going to be important to bring community-based organizations on board also so that this is not all about gee whiz tech companies doing everything. I think it's important for community-based transportation to be part of this solution. Another challenge is it's still early. So this is a graph of what Gartner calls the hype curve, that when a new possibility comes along in the world of technology, suddenly it becomes very visible. Everybody's looking at it. And then there's this disillusionment, and then where everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is terrible, and it doesn't work anyway like we thought it would, but there's this rebound later into real productivity. And this is edited by Graham Curry, and applies this to autonomous vehicles. And you can see we're on the low side of, the hype is starting to drop for autonomous vehicles. This was made before we actually started having deaths, as the one in Arizona, I believe, a few months ago. And so I think we're even further down, heading towards the trough of disillusionment. I think you could apply this graph to mobility as a service in general. that we're, it's still really early, and how this is all going to pan out is yet, we're yet to know about. But it's a tremendous time to get on board from a policy perspective. I want to wrap up with this concept, which I think is where the real opportunity is for everyone in this room, and that's to think about mobility as a service, not as a toy of the elites, not for urban commuters who have money to spend and like toys, but for a really true expansion of mobility for everybody. So this is about mobility as a service that fully includes people with barriers to mobility, older adults, people with disabilities, people in rural areas, making a really robust system that reduces the need for isolated services that are standalone, expensive, many times inferior, and a lot of those services exist, and this is no criticism of the people who have run them, but they exist because of market failure. And I would, what I'd love to see is a mainstreaming of as many people as possible into a broader system of mobility. And a lot of those parallel services can now could in turn expand out to serve the general public. So when you get a picture like that, universal mobility as a service could make conventional, you know, what I'll call the elite mobility as a service, more workable for the general public, because it should just be about Joe commuter getting to and from work. It should be about families. It should be about what if I've got a sick kid and I can't take my regular commute home? I need options for that. I need all sorts of support for different circumstances. If we build in the scenarios for the people with barriers to mobility, you're also building in also the scenarios for the people who would love to get rid of their car, but they know they're going to need it for this odd situation, right? So it's a win-win. I think it can what can serve older adults and folks with disabilities will also serve, I think, the general public tremendously. So this is where this exciting world of innovation and these new business models can meet public policy. Equity, inclusion, and the social outcome goals. We want age-friendly communities. We want aging in place. And we need mobility to act as a form of healthcare. And we all know that's true. I'm sure this has probably come out in the prior conversations that you've had, that transportation, well executed, is a form of healthcare, because if people know they can get out, they can get to their hair care appointments, they can go shopping, they can socialize easy, those are the people who aren't going to be showing up in the emergency room, right? So we need to be at the tables of all these smart cities conversations and all these whiz-bang conversations, the ones like Colleen was talking about, the one that she was at with Toyota. We need to be at those conversations early and often. That's the takeaway. So I'll conclude my remarks and would love to hear be part of a conversation.
Thank you. One question that comes to mind for me, we have universal laws for everyone. Do you have a sample policy to put in place for mobility as a service?
You know, it's...
We'd like to write a sample policy and give it to the county council, you see.
I would love to be part of that. You know, I mean,
what does one look like?
You know, I think a lot of it is going to be about regulation of the services. You know, I think I think there should be a... You know, my world is the tech world. I haven't really operated in the public policy sphere, and so a lot of the tools that are the go-to tools for policymakers and planners, I don't feel like I have the familiarity with. So I would love to sit down and have those conversations with planners to think about what that could actually look like We want to be, you know, in my mind, it wants to be a very inviting conversation so that public-private partnerships can happen. There's no way this can all happen strictly through government action, whether it's a transit agency or a other government entity. You know, we're going to need the agility and the sheer capacity of these large players. But you know, in their heart of hearts, they want to do the right thing. And if they can get that contact with the grassroots and with communities, then I think there's a lot's possible.
Other questions? Temple.
In light of Facebook's recent dark period and the difficulties with data harvesting, knowing that we need to have all of this data to make things interact, but also that there is a security and privacy risk,
yep.
What's that interaction with these kinds of services?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very important to look at the business models. I didn't quite touch on it. One of my bullet points in one of the slides is that business models matter a lot, right? So imagine a company that says, hey, we'll be the mobility manager, we'll be the hub for you, and we won't charge you a thing. You know, hold on to your wallet, right? Or hold on, imagine what's going on the other side. You know, we're seeing the development of a lot of new business models, and anything that's being touted as free or low cost or this is going to make everything amazingly wonderful, you really need to dig into what the business model is going to be. And again, you know, it goes back a little bit to the marketplace idea also, that ideally all these modes, you know, every time you choose a mode, ideally that selection, you're paying full freight for that entire mode, including the role that the mobility manager plays. That needs to be priced in. You know, to have it not priced in means you're going to be paying it for another way. And clearly the way we've been paying for a lot of these services is through giving up our privacy.
Question from the audience. A lot of tech stuff, wasn't it? So do you think Jana Linnet has such a policy? Or keynote speaker,
you know,
in February?
Jana Linnet is working on a document that will come out through the AARP in the fall. She actually asked me to review a portion of that. And that's actually where I got the term universal mobility as a service. So I'm using that term with her permission. And so I think I would keep an eye on her and what she's doing, because I think it's going to be they're going to do a big push on it. You know, it's not just sort of something they're going to be like mailing it out. Apparently there's going to be quite a big promotion of it. I don't know the name of the document or anything, but
okay.
Yeah.
Well, given that she's our keynote speaker in February, we'll ask her to bring it with.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, it'll probably be out by then. All right, thank you all.
Thank you, Kevin. The next part of our meeting is member and staff recognition. We do this once a year. You can probably hear the strands of pomp and circumstance. Two of our members are graduating this evening. Pat Janik is completing her first 3-year term, and Chuck Frayer has served two terms, 6 years, which you were an advisor to the Aging Readiness Plan too. So when we think back on these 6 years, we've done quite a bit. We're doing quite a bit in transportation and housing. We recommended housing to age in place. The county's looking into that and has actually made some code changes. The legislature asked us to testify about our aging readiness plan. We did that in our early days. We advocated for an elder justice center, which now exists. And as Colleen mentioned, we advocated for a mobility coordinator for the Human Services Council. Chuck Frayer, listen up. This is all about you.
Chuck, you don't have enough time.
Oh, yeah. Since Chuck has been on the Commission on Aging, he has helped develop guidelines for accessible building codes and, in fact, helped develop this brochure, the Clark County Universal Green Design Idea Book. He has also developed guidelines for accessible building codes and residential housing. He recently retired from the Forest Service, where he served 40 years as a regional recreation planner and civil engineer. And among other things, he co-wrote the Universal Design Guide to Outdoor Recreation. Over the years I've known Chuck on the commission, I find he is always pushing hard for what he believes in and asking questions and asking questions and asking questions, with the most often one being, why isn't this happening sooner? Einstein says it this way: learn from yesterday, live for today, hope for tomorrow. The important thing is to not stop asking questions. We're counting on you to keep on pushing and keep on asking questions, and we have a certificate of appreciation for you.
Oh, I do?
Yeah. But you notice I'm not sitting down.
I noticed that. Well, thank you. Wow, you know, 6+ years, probably about more like 8 years actually, with this process and everything. And I can honestly really say that there's really been a huge difference that's been made. And this commission has really helped, I believe, especially in the last 3-4 years, really help the county and city start to focus on really some critical areas. And the biggest one, of course, is the whole aging in place. We never talked about that. And now then, everybody talks about aging in place, and so it's a huge component of what's going on out there with us. I think first of all, I need to. I really need to thank my wife, who's not here, for allowing me to be able to do all the things that I do. Sorry, I get a little emotional. And then number two person is Marion Anderson. She's been my partner in crime, so to speak, out there for the last couple of years now then, and everything. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been very challenging. The first part of this group, I don't know if you've ever been a part of an organization being born and growing, but the first few years were very challenging for us. We really didn't know where we were going or exactly really what we wanted to be, but we knew that we needed to be doing something. And so the first few years were very, very challenging. But once we finally got our grounding and everything, I think now then the commission is going to become a very, very effective organization in this county. And so I just want to say that I've been very honored to participate. Now then, I'm going to be able to go and sit out there and be a problem. Not only I've been a problem here, but I'll be one out there too. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. During the time that Pat has been on the Commission on Aging, she's played a crucial role in helping the Commission sharpen its purpose and goals and addressing the major issues facing the aging population, including being an effective liaison with the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington. Before retiring, Pat served for 7 years as the executive director of the McDonald Center in Portland, and prior to that as director of the Southwest Washington Agency on Aging Human Services Council in Vancouver. Additionally, Pat has served in leadership positions that foster connections and a sense of community to people in Southwest Washington and in Washington, D.C., Annandale, Virginia, and Juneau, Alaska. It's fair to say that she has leveraged her master's degree of public administration from the University of Alaska into a lifetime of dignified service to others without fanfare and without seeking the spotlight. The best reward for a job well done was to have done it, according to Ralph Waldo Emerson, and I suspect you have the same philosophy. So please accept your certificate of appreciation.
I think Chuck covered it very well. I really want to thank my fellow commission members, both the ones that are here and the ones from the past. I think this group is really doing wonderful work, and I know you will continue. Thank you so much.
We also want to thank two staff members who worked, Colette Anderson is one who worked with the Commission on Aging before it was Commission on the Aging, stretches back to the Aging Readiness Plan. I just wanted to highlight the fact that she is doing additional responsibilities with Clark County now, but we do thank her for her service, and she didn't want to come tonight because she didn't want to be thanked in public. She doesn't like the spotlight, as is typical of the staff that serves the Commission on Aging. She will be getting a certificate of appreciation as well. And also Sharon Lumban-Tobing, who was with our group for about a year. I'm telling you what, she could take notes. We covered some pretty technical stuff with supportive services, and she took the notes so well that we really had trouble highlighting what would be the recommendations at the end. So we thank Colette Anderson and Sharon Lumban-Tobing also. So rather than move back to the chair, I'll just finish up here. Are there any public comments tonight? Our next meeting is our retreat, so we will be back here in July, where our speaker will be Tom Wilson with the Northwest Oregon Zone Coordinator of the AARP, and he will be talking about driver safety. And he's sitting right here. We'll see you in July. So if there are no questions, we are adjourned. Thank you so much.